see. You know, there's a number of reasons why people come to meetings and satsang. And many, many people come to meetings of satsang. I shouldn't say there are a lot of reasons, but there are a number of explanations that we give ourselves for why we come to meetings and satsang. I come because I love to be with you. I love to meet with you like this, in an atmosphere and a context that in which the true desire and the willingness to know the truth prevails. Many other come for the same reason, because we love to meet together and talk to each other and share with each other our experiences and our tribulations in an honest and mature desire to know the truth. Really, finally, to know the truth. There are others who come in various states of spiritual trances. People go a lot of places in various states of spiritual trances. A trance of what Gangaji calls being mentally enlightened, for example, which is a state of just knowing, I got it. I know it. I got the truth. And a state of great misery as we try to monitor everything that's going on to make sure that everything that's going on is in conformance with the certainty that I got it. I am awake. There's lots of other spiritual trances, too. There's spiritual melodramas and spiritual neediness. There's probably many other stories and explanations that people tell themselves for why they come to satsang. But there's a small, what seems to me in my experience, to be a rather small percentage of the whole who come to satsang because they are gripped with a vivid and lively desperation, who come to satsang because they have tried everything and nothing works, because they've tried mental enlightenment, they've tried spiritual practices, they've tried spiritual understanding, they've tried mundane secular understanding and acquisition. They've tried relationships. They've tried everything all their life. And nothing works. And they're desperate. Those are the ones I really love. That's really what I live for. Is that desperation. Because I am really familiar with that desperation. I got an email a couple of days ago from a woman, and I'm going to read it to you. I don't often, in fact, I almost never read letters in satsang, but I'm going to read this one because it's pretty much my favorite so far. I read it to the small group last night, but I guess you and Rosa and Carl just have to live with it. They're the only ones here who have ever heard it before. I don't know if you'll see this, but I felt compelled to write. I wonder if you have any words for me. I've been a frustrated, unhappy spiritual seeker for 30 years, and although I know intellectually what the truth is, I am so depressed because I just can't be happy. I cry all the time. I have felt called since I was 16. God or love is calling me, but yet I can't feel it, can't experience it. I read the words, your words, Papaji's words, Ramana's, Eli's, and they're all only words, just words. I've been to so many satsangs. I am currently in Lila therapy. I try to be still, but always end up feeling frustrated. I've seen all the videos, listened to the tapes constantly. I studied A Course in Miracles. If I have free time, I sneak out to my nearest metaphysical bookstore to soak up the truth. And then I read your words. If you would know yourself to be the perfect realization of truth, you need only stop searching for truth. John, how do I know I'm peace, love, and self? How? How do I finally experience what I know intellectually? How does one stop? Why can't I? How can I experience my true self? When I read the letters of love on your website, I just can't understand how others are getting the truth and I can't. Maybe I'm just not ripe enough to fall off the tree. But if I'm not, why is grace knocking so loudly at my door? And that's pretty much everybody's story at some point. That's pretty much the story that brings us into the spiritual Lila in the first place. And the question, how can I stop, is maybe the only question that's of any value whatsoever. All the other questions, well, maybe not all of them, but most of them, are exercises in postponement. A way to wait just a little bit longer, to get just a little bit more understanding, to get just a little bit more assurance. But the question, how do I stop? Because it seems really hard. There is within us, arising within us, ever outward flowing, this energetic sense of neediness, of something missing, of something to be gotten, something to be understood, something to be gotten rid of, something, some way to, well, really to put an end to this neediness, to this energy of searching, this energy of seeking, this energy of not finding. And it is our, in my experience, it is our relationship with this force that comes from we know not where, but that drives us always outward. It is our relationship with this force that is the whole cause of all the misery and suffering in humanity, and every human being. It is all our attempts to understand it, to follow it, to satisfy it, to control it, to deny it, to do something with it, to feed it, to ignore it, to get rid of it, that constitutes the entire story of suffering in a human life. And that's what's meant by not stopping. It's the continuation of this relationship between me and this sense that I need something, the sense that there's something that I don't have, something that will satisfy me. And this force is very real. This energy is very, very present. We can numb ourselves to it. We can do all kinds of things around it. But we can't get rid of it. And it seems sometimes that there's nothing whatsoever we can do to be finished with, well, pandering to it in one way or another. And we know, we really know, we recognize it when it's called to our attention, that if we could just stop this incessant looking, monitoring, working, trying, keeping things together, keeping a coherent story in place, that if we could only stop that, that everything would be all right. But how to stop? Papaji said stop. Ramana said stop. Gangaji said stop. How? Well, in my experience, there's two ways. There's two possibilities. One is, and they both amount to the same thing in the end. One is to, just for a time, set aside all spiritual understanding whatsoever. To just for a time, set aside all spiritual history, all the whole spiritual biography, where I am, what I have accomplished, what I know, what I don't know. Just set it all aside for a time and try with all our heart, you know, this energy that we have this relationship with is an experience like any other experience. It's a sensation within the body like any other experience. We spiritualize it, but it's really just another sensation. So one possibility is just to, in order to do something different, to just try with all of our hearts to find this sensation that all the fuss is about, this sensation that has driven me for my whole life long, and fall into it with your eyes open. See what it is. That's stopping. That's allowing the demon to consume you. That's one possibility. In my experience, my own personal experience, I couldn't do that. I could no more even hear the instruction to do that than I could fly to the moon. Although I was given the instruction to do that in no uncertain terms by my teacher, Gangaji. But I couldn't even comprehend what she was telling me. But I was desperate. I was really desperate. I knew that I had happened upon a possibility that by its very nature, by the nature of the way in which it's presented, it presents itself as, well, kind of the last chance. It presents itself as kind of all or nothing. If this offering of the possibility and the gift of investigation into what is real, if this proves to be false, because it has no spiritual trappings to it. It has no grand liturgies and explanations to it. If this extremely practical offering of the possibility of, in this lifetime, in this moment, directly investigating what is real, if that proves to be another dead end, then, well, all hope is gone. Nothing else has worked. Nothing. But I couldn't do that. I couldn't stop. But I discovered that Ramana Maharshi had a second option for stopping. And it really comes down to this. You will stop when you find what you have been searching for. You will stop when you find what you have been searching for. And Ramana tells us that what we have been searching for our whole lives long is nothing other than ourself. Just that. Now, we've heard that, all of us who have any spiritual biography whatsoever have heard that. But Ramana takes it a step further or a step less. He doesn't suggest to us that we find our true self, as this woman has suggested, or our higher self, or our God self, or our Buddha self, or our eternal radiant consciousness self, but just find ourself. Just really find the experience of being that is me. Just that. Don't be concerned about spiritual mumbo-jumbo, about subjects and objects and all of that stuff. Just innocently, nakedly, like a beginner, find ourself. Find this present experience that is me, that always has been me, that has never moved, that has never changed, and see what it is. Just that. See what it is, directly, immediately, before the stories, before the beginning of the spiritual biography, before anything, find me. And Ramana tells us that if we will do that, every time we think about it, every chance we get, without regard to the inevitable falling back into old habits and old ideas and old understandings and old sufferings and old stories, that doesn't matter. But just when we're not caught up in the old habits, in the old conditionings, in those moments when we're not, just stop for a second and look for yourself. Just that. Find whatever experience is present that you're referring to when you say me. Just that. And what he tells us is that if we'll do that, if we'll do nothing else when it occurs to us, if we'll just do that, that the mere experience of continuously tasting our actual nature clears everything up, puts an end to the whole show. Not in any way that can be incorporated into a spiritual understanding. Although God knows we have tried very hard to do that. Not in any way that can be expected or predicted. Not in any way that will satisfy the nattering monkey mind as it comments on what's taking place. But in a most mysterious way, the actuality that not only have we always never not been free, alive, eternal awareness. Not only that, but that we have never not known that. And that the investigation itself doesn't produce anything new. It doesn't produce any new understandings, any new knowing, but it reveals what's already here. And it reveals itself to be truly, in my experience, truly what we have always been looking for. And in finding what we have always been looking for and didn't know, the mechanism of the endless, needy, grasping, horrifying misery of searching for a solution breaks and stops. Now, this woman in her email ends by suggesting that maybe she's not ripe enough to be taken by grace, by this grace that really is authentically calling to her. This, what was it? This hound from hell that is grace. But from my point of view, this email is representative of the highest form of spiritual maturity, the highest form of spiritual ripeness. It's the coming head on to the recognition that nothing I've done has worked. I've tried really hard. I've thought from time to time that I got it, but nothing I've done has really worked. I'll try anything. So that's what I have to offer. It ain't much. It's only you, just as you are. But that's all I have. This invitation, this offering, the chance to meet with each other and talk about this, not about spiritual stuff, not about higher being or true self or enlightenment. God spare us from enlightenment. But just about this possibility that I received from Ramana and that proved true to me in my experience, that if I am just willing to do nothing whatsoever consciously spiritual except try to find out what I really am, that is not only all that's required, it's all that will work. The rest of it has usefulness. Spiritual understanding has usefulness. Spiritual practices have usefulness. Therapy, whether spiritual or psychological, has usefulness. Having a good job is useful. Having a good relationship is useful. It's worthwhile. But none of that will bring you home. All that will bring you home is to discover what home is, which is you, just as you are. Okay, that's all I have to say. Your turn. I always say that, then I end up rattling on some more. Does anybody not understand what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not saying don't disagree or agree, but not understand what I'm saying. Just really don't understand what I'm saying. Hi.
Hello. I guess I don't understand what you're really saying.
Why do you say that? Why do you guess that? What do you think I'm saying?
How to find my self. And accept. Find out who I am and be happy about it.
Well, just find out. You're adding too much to it. Just find out who you are, whether you're happy about it or not. Be willing to find out the truth of what you are, without regard to being happy about it or not happy about it. And without regard to accepting or rejecting it, since acceptance and rejection is irrelevant anyway, because here you are. Can't get rid of yourself. What I'm saying is to find out the truth of what you are, without any conditions. Isn't that what all the spiritual energy is about? Finding the truth? And what truth could be more primary than the truth of what I am? What truth could be more accessible than the truth of what I am? And I'm sure that we all have experience with teachings about what I am. You know, teachings. I am infinite, eternal, radiant consciousness. I am whatever. But those teachings never satisfy. They're just some story that we can use to torment ourselves or try to become. But the truth, in order to be the truth, cannot be anything but what's already here, what's actually present here. Can't be a story about it. The story about it springs forth from the discovery of its nature. And it has nothing really, has no real useful relationship to the actuality of truth. So since the goal of all spiritual striving is to know the truth, and since the phenomenon that is nearest and dearest to our heart, that is the most accessible, that is the most recognizable, is ourself. Start there. End there. If you start there, see whether anything else needs doing or getting. But the whole story is about myself, my getting it, my not getting it, my happiness, my peace, my torment, my confusion, my understanding, my love, my hate. It's all about me. And our habit is to look into the things that are about me instead of at the common denominator of it all, which is me. So the suggestion is to just simply see how straightforward and easy it is. It's really easy. The truth is easy. Truth is here. Knowing of the truth is here. It's never not here. It's inescapable. Truth is easy. So why not postpone all the rest of it? All the rest of the practices. Postpone all the rest of the understandings. And first find out what it's all about, which is me. Or I, to be more spiritually correct. Do you see that? Yes, Bridget. It's just the simplest, the simplest suggestion. Childish almost in its simplicity. Bridget.
John, I think I've heard you say in so much as other words like God doesn't make mistakes.
Huh?
God doesn't make mistakes.
I don't know if I'd say that, but I'm willing to say that.
Well, but when you try to look at your true self and you see so much imperfection.
Yes, but you see, the reason you're seeing imperfection is because you're looking for your true self. I'm not asking you to look for your true self. I'm asking you to look for your actual self. And if it is imperfect, then don't you want to know that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But you have to see the distinction between what I'm asking you to look into and what we are in the habit, accustomed to thinking of as ourself. What we're in the habit of thinking of as ourself is the story of me, as subtle and sophisticated and spiritual or unspiritual as it may be. What we're accustomed to looking at is the story of me. And part of the story of me is I am imperfect. I need to be perfected. But who is it that says that, if not I? What I'm suggesting is that without regard to the absolute certainty that I am imperfect and unworthy, which is a certainty, right? It's a certainty. Without regard to that, to find the actual nature of what that story is referring to. The experience that you're pointing to when you talk about imperfection.
perplexed.
I'm sorry?
I'm still perplexed.
That's okay. Perplexity is not a problem. Really. Perplexity, confusion, and none of that's a problem. It really isn't. It's only a problem if perplexity means something. That's all that makes it a problem, is the conviction that perplexity means something to me. But you can cut right through that perplexity, Bridget, and find the one who is perplexed. Find the what does the word perplexity point to? It's an experience, is it not? It's a feeling, right? What I'm suggesting is that instead of paying attention to the obvious, justifiable understanding that feeling is perplexity, you just put that understanding aside and really feel directly the sensation that goes by the name of perplexity. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear that, but to put it into practice, to put it into practice is harder than it, than you're saying.
Actually, it's easier. It seems hard, but it's easy. Is that the sensation not here? What about the sensation of it being hard? That's here, isn't it? You can feel that. And the spectacular promise of Ramana, and I will gladly co-sign this, although I don't think Ramana needs my co-signing. The spectacular promise of Ramana is that if you will feel whatever is here, anytime you get the chance, anytime it occurs to you to do so, that's all you can do, and that's all that needs doing. You don't have to worry about clearing up confusion. You don't have to worry about doing away with imperfection. You don't have to worry about the clouds of obscuration that are self-hatred and greediness or whatever. All you have to do is feel what's here. Every chance you get. And let the devil worry about the rest of it.
You mean just to stay with those feelings, observe them, and just...
No, I mean to feel it. To observe it is what we are accustomed to doing. We observe all of these energies and these sensations very carefully. We monitor them, keep an eye on them, track them, make sure they conform to what we think they ought to conform to. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that we stop doing that. That's what needs to be stopped. Not forever. I mean, you know, you can always do it again. It's fun. But just whenever it occurs to you, don't observe it. Feel it. Just sink into it. Whatever's here. Make it your meditation room. And the promise is that that's all you need to do. And that quite unexpectedly, quite without any rational explanation whatsoever, that this vastness of knowing, this vastness of love without condition that you are, will reveal itself to have always been here, suffusing everything. When you least expect it, it'll dawn on you. But it's not, it is not, I repeat, it is not a method whereby you can become enlightened. You can't become enlightened. That's the simple truth of it. No one has ever become enlightened. No person ever has become enlightened. You are alive. Free, eternal, love. And you know it. You just don't know that you know it because the habits of mind have accustomed us to think we know what knowing is, just like we think we know what perplexity is or confusion or desire. A hatred. And this method of Ramana's is absolutely practical. Just whatever you think of it, find yourself. Meet whatever's here. Sit in whatever is arising as your meditation room. Whenever it occurs to you. You can't do it wrong. Really. Joellen?
Did you say just stick with sensation?
I said feel sensation.
Be your sensations. When I'm just sensation, and I'm sort of meditating that way, and things arise, and if I don't do anything about it, they'll fade. And then another thing may come up, and it gets deeper and deeper, and then it opens up. And it's everything. Is that what you mean?
That's what I mean. And the payoff for the mind, you know, this whole search begins in the mind. Somehow it occurs to the mind that what I've been looking for all this time is spiritual rather than material. God knows how that thought occurs in a mind, but it does. And then the mind gets busy, generally gets busy trying to do away with itself. Because we've read and heard, all of us, that we are inexistent. But we don't even know what inexistent is. Because we've read and heard, all of us, that the ego sense is the problem. That the ego sense is what has to be squashed, done away with. And the ego sense certainly is this upwelling of energy that feels like lack, failure, wanting. And the payoff for the mind is when finally the mind gets tricked or cajoled or caught by surprise or whatever into actually looking for its own source, because that's what's happening here. It breaks into this vastness, this incomprehensible reality that is the source of all. and it becomes, whether it knows what's happening or doesn't know what's happening, of course it doesn't know what's happening. The mind is too puny for that. But whether it knows what's happening or doesn't know what's happening, it gets soaked with this knowing, with this reality. And in that soaking, its own knots and pettiness and old habits and stark, deep conditionings loosen. Not any, without any way of rationalizing, oh, this causes that. Just over time, mind gets better, looser, quieter.
You mean when you go back to real life and have to fix dinner, whatever, you retain some piece of...
Isn't that your experience?
That sensation?
Isn't that your experience?
I still get caught up in...
Isn't it your experience that over time, this getting caught upness, this conditioned misery that so afflicted you when I first met you, isn't it your experience that over time that loosens, gets softer? Sure, same. I mean, my God, there ain't nothing to you but conditioning. Conditioning will remain until your last breath.
Oh, okay.
Is that your experience?
It's just a little bit.
Seems like it, huh? It may seem like it from there, but from here, it seems like a whole lot.
Thank you. And there's a trust about it.
Yes, there's a great trust about it. And that trust, too, is a gift. That trust arises just like the knowing. There's a trust because, hey, the proof is in the pudding, you see. There's no dogma to Ramana's offer. There's no complicated metaphysical explanation and storyline that will give me peace and rest and comfort and so forth. The proof is in the pudding. And the startling thing about this offering is that that's the way it's presented. This is for everybody. There is no one walking the face of the planet who cannot turn their attention inward for just a moment to find the experience of being me. No one.
I have to say that most of the time, though, I'm just having to do life.
Is that a problem? What else are you going to do with your time, Joellen?
I don't like all these decisions.
What you don't like, you see, this investigation, there's no end to it. What you don't like, welcome. Not the conditioning around it, not the tasks of it even. You know, there's some tasks that come to me that I really think they stink, like working on the books and stuff. Okay? So it's not that. But when there is this experience that I don't like it, make that experience of not liking it. See if it's any different from everything else you have found when you've turned inward. See if there's any bottom to that. See if it's not you, the same.
Oh, if it can be just a passing. If you can go into that and it passes.
Yeah. Everything passes.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, everything passes. Whether you go into it or not, you can keep it. You know, you can stir it up and keep it for a while longer. And most of the time, that's what we do. And we do that with our torment as well as even more. We have not all that much experience of open-heartedness and bliss to hang on to, although we certainly do desperately. But even more, we work at keeping this experience of torment or not liking or not getting it or not quite ready or not quite done. We work at keeping that here. You have to see that. You don't have to see that. See, that's the thing. It might be useful for you to see that, but you really don't have to see that. The only thing that's required is that you fall into the experience of it. You see? And then see for yourself whether it's not true that it is mind that keeps these things stirred up, whether it is not true that it is mind that desperately clings to suffering and misery.
Well, the world is made up of it.
Huh?
The world is made up of it, and you have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Keep the body going and your taxes done and all that shit.
So? That is not the problem, you see.
You don't think it's a problem that people are getting bond?
No, it's not a problem. The problem, or what's perceived to be the problem, is the bad feeling of it. If all that was going on without any bad feeling, it wouldn't be any problem. What's perceived to be the problem is the bad feeling. What I'm telling you is, find out what that bad feeling is. Directly. You don't have to stop feeding yourself and writing checks and going to work and all of that. But when there's something that feels bad about it, right, instead of doing whatever you've done in the past about it, deny it, ignore it, control it, get rid of it. Do this. Find out what it is. Immediately, directly. Go into it. Let it have you. Sit in it as your meditation room, the bad feeling. And see. See what's needed there.
It's a judgmental mind about what we've made.
Huh?
It's a judgmental mind about what we've made, you know.
Judgmental mind. But even the judgmental mind is no problem. Who cares, really? I mean, that's what this whole show is made up of, this whole human melodrama that we are so much in love with, them and us and the good guys and the bad guys. It's all made up of the judgment of the mind. That's what mind does. It judges, it chooses. It says, basically, most fundamentally, it says, this is good and this is bad. And what the thises are feelings, feeling states. Bad feelings and good feelings. I want this, I don't want that. We can make it a lot more complicated, and we do, but at the heart of it, that's what it's all about. This is good, this is bad. I feel good if I'm a good person. I feel bad if I'm a bad person. Huh?
So it's just this made-up stuff, and
yeah,
we don't have to get...
We don't have to do anything.
Oh, worried about it.
We don't have to do anything. What we can do is find out what these things are that have been driving us. Directly. What these things are that are not welcome here. Before we kill them off, we ought to meet them. Find out what they are. And the promise is that if we'll just do that, every time it occurs to us, we don't have to be saints, for God's sake. We don't have to never, ever, ever in life again get caught up in the story. Just whenever it occurs to us, when you're doing that business and the bad feeling comes, the 10th time, the 100th time, the 1,000th time, then it dawns, say, oh, wait a minute, this is that bad feeling. Let's see what this is. That's all that's asked. That's all that's required. And that will do the work. The bad feeling will do the work. You just have to sit in it.
I don't think I understand.
Well, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You may not understand the story I'm telling about what I'm asking you to do, but you understand what I'm asking you to do. And that's all that matters.
Okay, I'll try it.
Okay? I don't understand the story I'm telling you about it. Linda? That's the incomprehensible, spectacular beauty of it. You don't have to understand it. Really. You just have to do it. And all will be well. You don't even have to know what you're doing. Hello, Linda.
Hi. This is very apropos because I was trying to do this last night. I was trying to fall asleep and my mind started worrying about a problem. And I was feeling the state of awareness that I was in, which was worry and fear. And so the mind kept bringing it up, and I kept feeling the worry and fear. And it's like I'm looking for some resolution or something, but it's just continuing.
Well, you know, I suspect that it's because you're looking at worry and fear.
Well, it is my consciousness at that moment, right?
Well, no, that's your explanation mm-hmm. of it. This is worry and fear. This feels really horrible. This really sucks. It's worry and fear. If you forget that it's worry and fear.
But the mind keeps reminding me about the specific.
It doesn't matter. Ignore the mind.
See, I can't do that.
Yes, you can.
Because in that moment, it seems like I am that mind.
And you are. That's not so far from the truth. But it has occurred within you as that mind. It has occurred to you to find out the truth. Now, we all have some big issues with finding the truth. And those issues have to do with the strength of our conditioning. Right? I mean, it's just in our nature. It's in your nature to continually know that what this is in worry and fear and come back in a circle like, this is worry and fear. I'm going to try to find out what it is so it'll go away. Right? And then, boom, back again. Well, it's not going away. It's still here. That whole playbook does nothing but keep it here and apart from you and afflicting you. But it has occurred to you, this mind, that it would be useful to know the truth of it. And that's all you need. You can, I promise you, Linda, you can. The next time you're lying awake, afflicted by worry and fear, you can remember this conversation. And you can remember that what you're doing is not trying to get rid of anything. It doesn't do you any good anyway. What stays, stays. What goes, goes. And you certainly have enough life experience to know that there's nothing you can do about that. So you're not investigating this in order to get rid of it. You're investigating this in order to test the preposterous claim that your certainty that what you're feeling is worry and fear and therefore bad is wrong.
Well, it feels bad.
Even that, you are testing the preposterous claim that what you call feeling bad is not feeling bad. And the only way to test this preposterous claim is to really, really feel it.
Mm-hmm. It feels like an energy that's strong.
That's right. And what you are called upon to do is to just fall back into that energy, that strong energy, with your eyes wide open, and see what it is. See where it ends. See where it comes from. Forgetting momentarily the fact that it's a bad feeling. You know, bad feelings are feelings too, right?
But the thing that really drives me nuts is sometimes I can do that for a moment, but then the mind will just remind me again, right?
That's okay. That's okay. That's not a problem. That will pass. But it takes time. And it takes the determination every time to find the truth of what's here, the actual truth of it, the reality of it. And those, all those jumping outs of the mind, but wait a minute. All of that is mechanical. There's nothing whatsoever you can do about it except to do what has been suggested to you, to continue looking for the truth of what's here. Despite the mind's...
That almost seems to perpetuate the negative state.
It
almost seems to perpetuate the negative state, which...
Yes, it does. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
And why would I want to perpetuate a negative state, you know?
Well, you tell me. You're doing it.
But usually we try to distract ourselves. Get up.
Which is another way of perpetuating it, is it not?
Well, it seems to, in that moment, make it lessen.
Yeah, but really doesn't. It's back there, nagging away. I don't know. You know, the great goal, the great interpretation, and this is the thing I'm saying. This energy that drives us, our opinions about it are interpretations of it. And whatever interpretation is being applied to what's present is wrong. It's just a theory. Even the fact that it's a bad feeling is just a theory. It's an interpretation. And what I'm saying is that the mind, well, I remember where I was going now. I get lost sometimes. The interpretation by the mind of this energy that drives us is that it needs something it doesn't have. That's the interpretation of the mind. And that if I'm not careful, what it needs is me. And it'll swallow me up. And this interpretation by the mind causes the mind to contort itself into endless structures and conditioned ways of approaching and relating to and dealing with this ever-rising energy, which is just the life force, not what we think of it at all. So those ancient, well-oiled mechanical structures that the mind has created in order to protect itself from what it interprets to be a threat to its happiness, to its survival, they continue. That's not a problem. They will continue until they don't continue anymore. Nothing that we have done has succeeded in stopping them. No therapy, no spiritual understanding, no spiritual practice, no material practice, no initiations, no anything has succeeded in stopping them. Therefore, it is sheer intelligence to just give up trying to stop them and instead find what it is they're all about. Do you hear this? Directly. And it doesn't matter. You'll get caught up in it. again and again. But this spectacular promise of Ramana is that that doesn't matter. That the work is done in meeting what's here, and that everything else can be left in the hands of what is met here. All you have to do is every time it occurs to you, feel what's present directly, like a child. I've said this a couple of times recently, I'm going to say it again. It really is a requirement that this be done with a very childlike nature. Jesus said that unless you become as a little child, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And we hear that like a little child full of innocence and freshness and open-heartedness. But that's not what he's talking about. I mean, I was a little child, and I don't ever remember not being greedy and hateful. Never. What he's talking about is the ignorance of childhood. The ignorance that doesn't know that doing this won't work. The ignorance that doesn't know that the subject cannot find itself as an object, as all of us advanced spiritual types know. And that's what's required. What's required is to put everything else aside, everything you know, all of your hard-won understanding and intuition, insight, put it aside. And with the absolute ignorance of a small child, find out what's here. What's afflicting me? What is this anyway? Yes, I know I'm going to get tired of it or get bored with it and go do something else, but so what? It'll come to you again. It'll come around again. And you'll remember. Okay? Anybody else? I know this is a hard pill to swallow. I really do. I know that first of all, it seems too easy. And next of all, it seems too hard. And on top of all of that, it means turning my back on everything that I've spent my life knowing is important. Turning my back on everything in my life that I know is really true and the way to be. All my hard work, all my effort, turning my back on all of it. I know it's a really hard pill to swallow. I do. Yes?
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know if this is a question. I'm really new at all this, and...
That's really good.
I think I understand. I guess what I've done in the last week is to commit myself to diving, and I'm very aware of all the things I have done over the years to distract myself from just going into the feelings, and so I know I'm still putting up barriers. I'm still putting up obstacles every time something comes up. And usually it's about schedules. You know, it's about, I can't do that now. You know, I've got too much that I have to do, too much that I have to accomplish. I can't. And then, you know, and then I have this idea that the diving takes time. You know, that it's not a simple process, but because, you know, what you hear about it, and a little bit of what I've experienced is that you go deeper and deeper, and there are all these different levels, and I end up feeling like I have to put it off. You know, I have to postpone.
Forget all that. Forget all the levels.
Yeah.
Forget all the deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
Those are imperfect and confusing ways of talking about something that really can't be talked about. Here's the deal.
And I don't, and it is hard to hear. Okay, this is what you're supposed to be experiencing.
Don't pay any attention to anybody telling you what you're supposed to be experiencing.
Even Eli.
Here's the deal. Okay?
Even Eli.
Even me. Here's the deal. Here you are, right? You are here. Are you not?
Yes.
Are you not here?
Yes.
What could be simpler than to look and see what you are? Now, it doesn't take any time.
It's just putting your attention there even
now.
Before.
Right. Always now.
Yeah.
But you see, now is always here. Always.
Okay.
There is no time that is not now.
Okay, I'm letting my mind wrap around that one.
Yeah, well, it'll flounder if it does.
Yeah.
All that's asked is that right now you feel what it is to be you.
Mm.
Before the stories, mm-hmm. before the biography, mm-hmm. before anything.
Okay.
Just feel what it is to be you. Right now. At any time. Right now. And that, there is no, then the story of postponement is illuminated and revealed to be just a story of postponement. Because now is here always. Okay?
Yeah. Tears.
And pay no attention to what you have heard or what you have interpreted about what you have heard from anybody about what you should be feeling. Really. You want to know the truth. You don't want to know that the truth is what Eli says it is, or is what John Sherman says it is, or is what God says it is, for that matter. You want to know the truth. The truth is here, right now.
Thank you.
Okay? Thank you very much. Carla's the keeper of the microphone. I didn't know if she was going to pass it over or not.
I still have to know. When you're feeling something awful about what you see around you, is it a relief when you realize it's just a construct?
Is there? Is it? Have you felt relief?
When I can convince myself that it is.
I don't think convincing yourself will ever produce a feeling of relief. I don't think convincing yourself will ever produce a feeling of relief. Have you not had a feeling of relief, Joellen, in all the time we've known each other? There's not been one single moment when a feeling of uncaused relief overtook you? Tell the truth.
You say, have I never had a feeling of relief?
Yeah.
Oh, I have it when the focus shifts to beauty and reality.
If you're looking for relief as your goal, it will elude you. Relief comes and goes. Okay? I know, I have seen you overwhelmed by what I would call relief. It may have been too big for you to call by so simple a name. But I've seen you. Those experiences of relief, of resolution, of peace even, they come and go. The tendency of the mind to grasp onto them, to wish they would stay, is just a tendency of the mind. It has nothing to do with you. I tell you that what you really want, this feeling state that you so desperately desire, all of us, not just Joellen, but all of us, is the feeling state that's present now. Always now. And that's what's seen in the investigation. That's what you see when you look.
In this,
yeah,
tonight's present, yeah, time.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm, and if I let myself think about the newspapers, you know, that's what I'm.
Yeah, well, you do that because it's fun.
I.
It's fun to hate Bush. Fun to hate that gang.
You think it's.
You know.
You think if you do something that it must be fun, you must be wanting to do it?
Yep. If you do something, you want to do it. That's true.
Boy, I got a long way to go.
No, because you're confused as to who it is that you are. When I say if you do something, it's because you want it, it's what you want to do. I'm speaking to you as this crazy mind that loves to read the newspapers and get churned up about it and wish things were different. But that's okay. Nobody's harmed. Really. It's just play. It's just a story.
See,
what
that's a relief.
You?
Huh? It's just a story, a construct.
Yeah. Isn't it?
It sure looks like it.
There it is, then. Give it up, man. It's time. Give it up. Let it go. It's okay. The whole show is okay.
It's just a certain amount you have to do, you know.
Yeah.
You have the operation, whatever.
And you see, when you come to me like this, right? This is that same storyline running. Oh, wait a minute, I don't really get this. I don't really understand this. I don't. But because look what I do. I read the newspaper. I hate the people. I do this.
I only read it once a week or so.
Enjoy yourself. That's the whole of it.
I come here to remember.
Yes, I know you come here for good and true reasons. I know that. Okay, one more. That's why I said one more.
So what you're saying is that you find yourself or observe or you feel your presence. And then life continues around you. You go and life is, the world happens. People hate people, kill people, do bad things, and it could be to you, or you can have pain, but you're saying just be, and then you get in and out of that, but then just be.
That's, yes, except that all this is happening not around you, but within you, as you, and except for the fact that, and this is really important to see, and I really hate to say this because it smacks of a teaching, but everything that is happening now, here in this moment, here in this world, everything that's occurring, every thought that you think, every action that you take, every moment of behavior is the result of past action. Why, by the time you notice what you're doing, it's already done. By the time you notice the thoughts that have come to you, it's already done. It is the same with the whole world. There is nothing whatsoever that can be done about what's manifesting here and now. It's absolutely the outcome and the consequence of past action. The only thing you can do by becoming involved in the story of me or the story of the horror of the world or the story of the fundamental unsafeness of being, the only thing you can do is to take action by becoming entangled in it and cause more misery in the future. It's not that your actions and your involvement have no effect. They just have no effect on what's here now. You've already done that. So what's possible, the only thing that's possible, is to stop all you're doing. And the only way to stop all you're doing, which has nothing to do with behavior, that's preordained by what you've done in the past or what others have done in the past. The only thing to be done for the good of humanity, for the good of all creatures whatsoever, is to stop trying to fix things now. And the only way to do that, in my experience, is to find the truth of what you are. To find the truth of what's here. To ignore the content of the story about what's happening. Do you follow that?
To ignore it?
By ignore it, I mean don't move into it. Don't claim it. Don't try to fix it. By ignore it, I don't mean deny it or turn away from it. Quite the contrary. I mean to pay no attention to the content of your thought about what's arising and allow yourself to fully feel nakedly what's actually arising. And yes, the world, your life, the behavior of this character, of this personality, will continue. It does anyway, with or without your involvement. But by you no longer putting future action into the mix, you no longer will be causing trouble for this personality or for the people around you in the future. And the personality that is no longer afflicted by my involvement in it becomes softer. The knots loosen. The behaviors become more fragrant. Okay. We are really out of time, but one more.
I know everybody in this room probably has had the experience of reading the paper and hating what they...
Yeah.
See, now, I had to stop reading it a couple of weeks ago to release
myself.
That's
good. Stop reading it. You know, I mean, if it causes you...
It's making me crazy.
If it makes you crazy, stop reading it.
Exactly.
I support that.
But then I had a dream a few nights ago. I have two small sons. I dreamed that it was the progressives being taken away, like the Holocaust. It was very powerful. I had to go check on my boys. And I thought the next day, right, if I stop reading, ignore it, and I totally understand, I think, what you mean by don't buy into it, don't indulge it, don't keep the ball rolling, because hate creates hate. But I thought, well, what about love? And I don't know if this is exact, this is my first time here, so I don't know if this applies, but what if we started fresh with love? What if we didn't just get infuriated by what DeLay is doing today or his family or whoever, but what if we started saying, well, this is how I'm going to live? Because the one question, the reason I raised my hand to extend this evening was, what if we all stopped getting involved? Which one would roll over? Would it be the evil we see, or would it be the love? And I just feel like I need to be a part of the love.
I tell you that there's nothing but love anywhere to be found. all things whatsoever have as their essential nature love without condition. There are many stories, hateful, ugly, horrifying stories, stories that manifest as persons, as people in the world. But even those stories have as their essential nature love without condition. Now, I have never found anybody able to do love. Never. How can you love? You know, Jesus Christ said, love your enemy as yourself. Right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Can you do that? What is this love that can be done by human mind? What is this? I tell you that you are love. And I tell you that if you will truthfully, without any idea that this is true, because don't take that. Don't believe that. But I tell you that if you will absolutely, nakedly, like a child, wrapped in ignorance, find out the truth of what you are, you will discover what the truth of what all is. There's no love, there's no hate, there's no enemies, there's no friends. It's all love. All of it. But what good is that to you for me to tell you that? Or what good would it be for me to tell you, yes, love, start fresh. Yes, what good would that do? Who can do that?
Can we do nothing? Is that what you're asking?
I am asking you, if you could do nothing, please do so. What I am asking you, if you cannot do nothing, then find out who you are that can do nothing. That's what I'm asking. Don't you see that for the entire history of humanity, there has been horror? The whole blood-soaked history of this species is horror, is hatred, is destruction, is murder and rape and pillage. The whole of it for 10,000 years and more before there was history. And throughout that entire history, there have appeared many ideas about what to do about it. Truth, really, will take care of it all. That once I am not aggressively trying to fix myself in order that I can aggressively try to fix everything else, everything's okay. Really. That's the only hope for us, you know. Really. We know that. We have our history. Cycle after cycle, generation after generation after generation. New ideas, new philosophies, new political things. We gotta fix this. We gotta be right. We gotta do right. We gotta, everybody on the face of the earth, without exception. Every human on the face of the earth, without any exception whatsoever. Saddam Hussein, George Bush, DeLay, the whole bunch of them. Everyone is doing what they think is right. They are driven by the determination to be righteous. All of us. Let's be done with that. Let's try something new. Let's try to find the truth. That's what all the great ones have told us is the only fix, the only antidote is the truth. Just for something different. Let's do what they say. That's my view of it. It doesn't mean that you should stop doing anything. that you should stop political involvement. It doesn't mean anything. All that stuff is irrelevant to the preeminent internal call, which is in us all, to know the truth. Okay? And the truth is easy. Truth is here. Never moves. Patient. Love without condition. Okay. I'm really happy to have met with you like this, all of you. Just know the truth. Now. Not then. The truth is never then. Never. It's always now. Thank you for this satsang. Thank you for your time and attention. May all being know itself. You see, may all being know itself. Not know itself to be love. Not know itself to be righteous. Not know itself to be consciousness. Just know itself. Simple. Keep it simple. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Blessings to all.